Today's Washing Tech episode is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at washingtech.com/book. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. And also Warby Parker. Get a free 5-day home try-on at warbyparkertrial.com/joe. 5 pairs, 5 days, and the try-on is 100% free. That's warbyparkertrial.com/joe.
We know that where you live can affect everything from the quality of your school to whether you can buy fresh food, whether you can access public transit to get to a job, whether there's childcare, whether there's a well-paying job nearby, or you're going to be taking a really long commute, whether there are parks that you can let your kids play in, and whether you feel safe enough letting them out of the house. So all of these things can interplay together to really dictate your chances of rising up the economic ladder or being trapped in poverty.
Welcome to the Washing Tech Tech Policy Podcast. We deliver the latest tech policy news and brightest tech policy experts to you. Wherever you are, so you can stay productive, relevant, and informed in less time. From Washington, D.C., it's the Washing Tech Tech Policy Podcast with Joe Miller.
Congresswomen Ocasio-Cortez and Pingree call out tech giants for funding climate change deniers. The U.S. charges Huawei, and Alicia Mazzara is my guest today. Democratic Congresswomen Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Shelley Pingree called out Google, Facebook, and Microsoft last week for sponsoring an event put on by the CO2 Coalition, an organization that opposes policies that are designed to address climate change. Through company spokespeople, all three companies sought to distance themselves from the views expressed at the event by saying they support organizations across the political spectrum and highlighting their substantial investments to address climate change. After those companies released statements, Ocasio-Cortez and Pingree pushed back even further, saying the climate change crisis is too great for the companies to permit themselves to undermine their leadership by associating with propagandistic organizations like the CO2 Coalition. The Department of Justice has indicted several affiliate subsidiaries and executives of Chinese telecommunications firm Huawei. The company is accused of stealing intellectual property from T-Mobile and violating U.S. sanctions against Iran. U.S. officials say Huawei's alleged theft of intellectual property from T-Mobile gave the Chinese government backdoor access to technology from a U.S.-based telecommunications company, thereby endangering U.S. national security interests. The U.S. is also in the process of extraditing Huawei's chief financial officer, Meng Wanzhou, from Vancouver in order to face charges that she worked to circumvent U.S. trade sanctions against Iran. Google, Facebook, and Amazon increased their lobbying spending in 2018 over the previous year during increased scrutiny from Congress regarding how the companies use personal data. Google's lobbying expenditures jumped from $18 to $21 million. Amazon spent $14.2 million, up from $12.8 million in 2017, and Facebook spent $13 million, $1.5 million more than the previous year. All three companies concentrated a fair share of that spending in the fourth quarter. Netflix has joined the Motion Picture Association of America, which since 1922 has been the trade association for the 6 major film studios. The announcement came the same day Netflix received its first ever Best Picture nomination for Roma. Several advocacy groups, including the Electronic Frontier Foundation and Color of Change, are calling on the Federal Trade Commission to break up Facebook, according to a Wall Street Journal report on a draft letter it obtained. In addition to Facebook, Facebook also owns Instagram and WhatsApp. Many advocates and civil rights groups, including the NAACP, have taken aim at Facebook following the Cambridge Analytica debacle for how the company traffics in its users' data. It's not clear what authority the FTC would have to break up Facebook. However, the agency is assessing whether Facebook violated the terms of a consent decree the company signed back in 2011 when it allowed Cambridge Analytica to access data of some 87 million Facebook users when Cambridge Analytica allegedly handled most of the analytics that went into the Trump 2016 presidential campaign. The U.S. Labor Department filed a federal complaint against Oracle last week, claiming the company owes some $400 million in lost wages to women and people of color. The Labor Department says only 11 of 500 people hired in a technical jobs over a four-year period were African-American or Hispanic, and that 5,000 women and 11,000 Asian employees were also underpaid by as much as 20% compared to their white male counterparts. A new MIT study says that Amazon's facial recognition technology is biased against women and people of color. The study found that Amazon's recognition classified a disproportionate number of women as men. The Secretaries of Defense and Commerce and top Republicans and Democrats in Congress appointed former FCC Chairwoman and Commissioner Mignon Clyburn to serve on the newly created National Security Commission on Artificial Intelligence. The new commission will advise the U.S. government on national security and competition issues related to artificial intelligence. Former Alphabet CEO Eric Schmidt will chair the commission, and Clyburn will serve with Oracle CEO Safra Catz and executives from Google and Microsoft, among others. The commission was created by the 2019 National Defense Authorization Act and has a $10 million budget through 2020. And you can find links to all of these stories in the show notes and also in our Twitter feed. And our handle is at WashingTech. Stay with us. WashingTech Tech Policy Podcast listeners, Audible is offering a free audiobook download along with a 30-day free trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. You can listen wherever you are. How about Evicted, Poverty and Profit in the American City by Matthew Desmond? You can download Evicted free by trying audible.com. Sign up for your free audiobook and 30-day trial today at washingtech.com/book.
You're plugged into the WashingTech Tech Policy Podcast, the inclusive voice of tech policy.
My guest today is Alicia Mazzara. She's a research analyst in the Housing Division of the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. She works on issues related to federal low-income housing policy. Prior to joining the center in 2015, Mazzara was a policy advisor in Third Way's economic program, where her research centered on income inequality, labor market dynamics, and workforce development. She's also spent time working in the federal government and as a research associate at the Pew Charitable Trusts. Mazzara has a bachelor's in political science and international relations from Carleton College and a master of public policy from George Washington University. Please welcome Alicia Mazzara. So first, I want to say that I'm just blown away by your findings in this paper. I'm absolutely fascinated by how accessible data has become and how brilliant people, how well brilliant people like you and your colleagues are able to take this data, find trends, find disparities that we'd never thought of. So I just want to commend you for that.
Thank you. We really appreciate it. I really appreciate it. We really strive to take complex topics like this and make them compelling and easy to understand. So data is a really critical tool to help us educate folks, including policymakers and journalists and concerned citizens.
So you've mapped and are in the process of continuing to map the extent to which there are all these affordable housing rental units in great neighborhoods that no one's renting. So I want to take more of a deep dive, but let's give us your abstract first. What's the thumbnail sketch here?
So we have this idea in America that, you know, anyone can make it if you try, right? But the data do tell us a different story. In a lot of places, your zip code is your destiny. And this is in part because housing policy in the early part of this century actually created the patterns of racial and economic segregation that we see to this day. So fostering disinvestment in certain communities and really transferring resources to others. So we know that where you live can affect everything from the quality of your school to whether you can buy fresh food, whether you can access public transit to get to a job, whether there's childcare, whether there's a well-paying job nearby, or you're going to be taking a really long commute, whether there are parks that you can let your kids play in, and whether you feel safe enough letting them out of the house. So all of these things can interplay together to really dictate your chances of rising up the economic ladder or being trapped in poverty. And this is a big problem, not just for specific places and people, but because when we leave certain people or certain communities behind, the entire region suffers.
So what are you hearing from folks when you tell them about this research and they say, well, you know, I really like where I live. I don't consider it a poor neighborhood. I just consider it home.
So, you know, a lot of our study talks about the opportunity that people have if they move to lower poverty, higher opportunity neighborhoods. But it's really important to also underscore that moving isn't for everybody, and it's a legitimate choice to not want to move. Want to be able to stay near your family or near childcare or near your job. And, you know, we can't expect everyone to move, and that's not fair. So one thing that's also really important about our research and that I want to emphasize is that, you know, we also want to make sure that we improve communities where people are going to want to continue to stay. So making sure that schools are good, that people have access to good jobs, and that they have equal chances to succeed.
So let's talk about enforcement, because I think a lot of people think that because we have a voucher program that landlords are required to honor those vouchers. And a lot of people will say, you know, they were aware of these properties, but they end up being turned away anyway. Why do you think that's happening? And what do we need for better enforcement here?
So in most places, unfortunately, landlords are totally allowed to refuse to rent to someone just because they have a voucher. They can just say, hey, I don't want to participate. And we do find in recent research that there are a lot of landlords that just turn folks down, particularly in lower poverty neighborhoods. So there are a few places where there are laws on the books that prevent landlords from discriminating on the basis of someone having a voucher. And that is an important first step. But it's not most of the country, right? Most places that people with vouchers live do not have those laws on the books. And even if they are on the books, like you said, doesn't necessarily mean that they're being enforced. So we also need lawyers and tenants' rights advocates to make sure that renters are informed of their rights and that we're actually holding landlords accountable.
So what are some other findings that we should be aware of?
So I don't want to sound like it's all doom and gloom. Now, we do find that by and large, families with vouchers are disproportionately located in higher poverty, lower opportunity neighborhoods than the rental market would seem to make possible, at least based on location of other apartments that are affordable to them. But there are some metropolitan areas in our study that are doing better than others at ensuring that families really have free and informed choice about where they use their voucher, and that includes gaining access to these higher opportunity, lower poverty neighborhoods if they want to move. And just the fact that we're finding that there are so many more rental units that are affordable with a voucher in these neighborhoods means that there's room for improvement, right? That means we can shut down an argument that simply says, well, no one lives in these neighborhoods because they just can't afford it. So now we have a little bit of a handle on the problem. That means we can start to craft solutions. Now, it doesn't mean that every apartment that we found in the data is vacant or the right size or the landlord will rent to a voucher holder like we discussed earlier, but just the fact that we're seeing this many more apartments is a good sign.
Well, Alicia, thanks for joining me. This paper is exceptional, like I said, and I hope it gets the credit it deserves. So thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me. We've worked really hard to add a lot of powerful graphics and interactive tools, including a map that people can go visit and actually plug in their own city and play with the data. So we really hope that people get engaged and look at what's going on in their local communities and really feel inspired to learn more about this issue. And we hope it inspires policymakers and journalists and housing and civil rights advocates to try and push for change.
Now let's do an icebreaker, get your career hack, and hear about what you're reading and watching these days. Okay, so it's time for this week's icebreaker. Are you ready?
Yep.
What's your favorite section in a bookstore or library?
It would have to be fiction. I'm trying to read to relax, which usually means that I need to escape from what is happening day to day. But I still want something that feels a little bit relevant. So I definitely like things like historical fiction or maybe something that's a little bit fantastical or mysterious, but isn't, you know, so much like dragons or something like that. Something that feels relevant, but also that feels a little separate and apart from our day-to-day lives.
I like the literature section. There's a lot of great books I just haven't read. And so I've made this next chapter in my life more about doing more reading for pleasure and hearing about how authors have treated the human experience throughout the years. So what are you reading, listening to, and watching these days?
As far as reading, I am in a book club, and so that shapes a lot of what I read. I am in a wonderful book club with other great women that have really interesting book choices. We just finished a beautiful short story collection called Thing Around Your Neck by Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie. She's a Nigerian author, and so the stories focus a lot on life in Nigeria, but also on Nigerian immigrants in America. And they touch on, I think, a lot of beautiful universal themes. Whether you know a lot about Nigeria or not, they're very much worth reading. They're just lyrical and beautiful and effortlessly written.
How do you stay productive and successful, Alicia? What are some of your tactics for getting your work done?
I am a big list person. I make lists for everything. I map out my week and I figure out what to prioritize for the week. I also do it for any given day. And even if I have like a few hours to kill and I'm not sure where to start, I will make a list about it. I'm a really big advocate of using lists to take a big task and break them up into lots of smaller ones so that you can actually get started. Otherwise, it is just so, so easy to push something off and not know where to begin.
Well, thanks again, Alicia, for joining me. Do you have any final ideas you'd like to leave with us before we close? And where can we find you online?
So I think if folks have found this conversation interesting, I would really encourage them to, you know, check out our report, check out our data, but also to learn more about housing policy in this country and how it has shaped our cities. And I'd really challenge folks to say, challenge your assumptions about why our cities are the way they are and why our neighborhoods are the way they are. So I'd really encourage folks to check out books like The Color of Law by Richard Rothstein and Evicted by Matthew Desmond to get a start on that. As far as finding my work, you can keep up with my work at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities website, which is cbpp.org. And we're also on Twitter and Instagram as @CenterOnBudget.
And you've been listening to Alicia Mazzara, research analyst at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, who recently co-authored along with Brian Knudsen a great paper entitled Where Families with Children Use Housing Vouchers, a comparative look at the 50 largest metropolitan areas. It's absolutely brilliant, and we've linked to it in the show notes. Alicia, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
That concludes episode 171 of the podcast. Thanks so much for listening. If you like what we do, we'd love to hear from you. Please take a moment, head over to Apple Podcasts, leave us a review. It helps others know what they can expect from the show and really helps us out. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you back here next week. Take care.